Guess what day it is?
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
610 summer's here and it continues. I don't think it'll ever be below 80 again. We're moving politics from Thursday to today just this week because I'm not going to be here tomorrow. I'll be back on Friday for the Walk of Fame ceremonies, but you and a young man named Dave Ennett will do the show tomorrow. But today we'll have Edelstein and Pat Brady to talk a little bit about the two least likable candidates in American history. There was some violence at a Trump rally last night. These anti-Trump protesters got completely out of hand, broke down the front door, and security got them out of the building. I don't know how many arrests were actually gotten. Mm-hmm. I'm inventing the English language as we go along. But it reminded me of the look of what happened here when he was here, when the speech didn't happen, except it got a little rougher there.
Right,
this
USC.
Is in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. The New Mexico governor refused to greet Trump, said she was too busy. And on the Hillary side of the equation, she is hitting back equally hard at him while he hits at her and hits at Bill Clinton and their marital issues from the 90s. It's really delightful, and we've only got 6 months to go.
It's unbelievable. 10 arrests, by the way, so far, and those were for the people who lit the fires and then smashed in the door at the Albuquerque convention.
Well, they jumped up and down on cop cars. Cops were told to stand down for a period of time. Several cops got hurt. Mm-hmm. They're throwing items. I mean, completely out of hand. You know, you compare it to what happened in Baltimore this week when the Freddie Gray verdict came down and there was no violence.
No, and they had set up barriers. They had set up police officers. Yeah. And you're right, there was calm.
So it's not an incident-driven thing. It's a character-driven thing. And if you're going to engage in violence, well, I guess then you're that type of person. And yes, I'm stereotyping. So, we'll get into politics, as I said, after 7, and maybe talk a little bit more about Governor Rauner's appearance yesterday on the show. I think the most striking thing Governor Rauner said here yesterday was if it were just he and Rahm Emanuel or he and John Cullerton negotiating the budget deal, would have been done by now.
It would have been a done deal.
In other words, Madigan is the fly in the ointment.
Well, he said there's one lawmaker...
Right.
Holding things back.
And he said his name rhymes with Schmadigan.
Alluded to it.
Yeah. So the interview is all pieces of the show of relevance, and most of it's relevant. Some of it, I'll be honest with you, not so relevant. But it are up on in podcast form wherever you get your podcasts, which include TuneIn Radio, WGNRadio.com, the WGN Radio app, iTunes. And Dave has them available in his car. He sells them out
of
his truck.
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm.
That's a little snapshot of what's happening in the news as we start the program at 6:13. Did you have a nice night last night?
It was not. I did have a nice night. It just kind of relaxed. Took a long bike ride. And you know what? Last night, slept with the windows open. I didn't put the air on. It was actually warm. You know how you don't just kind of let, you don't want
but
the sheets
really.
This
is interesting to me because you have established before you're notoriously cheap when it comes to your utilities.
Oh, yeah.
Because your mother traumatized you.
I thought you'd forget about that. But yeah, there's no way I'm going to put the air
conditioning on. You don't
like
to turn the heat on in the winter, the air in the summer. The lights have to go off at a certain hour.
No, in fact, they sent a note out to everybody in the building saying, hey, the air conditioning has been turned back on for the building now because they have to make the switch.
Right. You go, not in Andre Dallas's place.
I thought, okay.
Andre, do you have plastic on your furniture?
No. That was my mom's. Yeah. Although my mom claims that she didn't. That was my grandma. But she carried it on for
everybody
4 years.
Everybody had a relative where if you sat on the furniture, you'd slide off. That was or the furniture made an incredible amount of noise.
Or you'd stick to it in the summer. It was awful.
Or a room you couldn't go in. Like the front room. Did you have that too?
It smelled like mothballs.
The front room.
And the
front
carpet
room,
was...
front room or the non-family room. The living room.
Yeah, that was ours.
The sitting room.
Yes. And why are they called living room when no one lived in it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the vacuum marks on the carpet were perfect.
Yeah, if you ever want to sell your house, just show people into your living room or your formal dining room because you use them twice a year. But Dave, how about you? Did you have a nice night?
I did. Did a little yard work.
Mm-hmm. It was, I love the weather. It's just great.
Summertime. Dave had an encounter with a wild animal again because Dave lives at a nature preserve.
I don't live in a, that's the thing. I live in a very populated neighborhood, but I'm out.
What do you mean very populated? It's you and the Ingalls family.
No. He's Dr. Doolittle out there.
Briar Rabbit.
So you were outside.
Mm-hmm.
Well, retell the story if you can without shuddering.
So, yeah, no, I'm.
And Jack Hanna lives next door, right? The guy from the Columbus Zoo?
Yes, he does. Okay. Well, I mentioned we've had these coyotes hanging around the last few weeks.
And you know, if you see one, there's hundreds.
There have to be at least a few.
Hundreds.
And so I'm just watering our newly planted vegetation. And about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't know if.
A little watering can?
Did you have a little watering can, like with flowers on it?
No. Yes, I did. It's actually very, it's the easy way to do it.
Sure.
You don't waste any water.
You got a big old tin watering can, right? The old school kind.
Exactly. Yeah, I go back to the well, and I fill it up, and I come back.
Right.
And so there's a new house under construction right by me, and I see something over in the bushes crawling, and
was it Jack Hanna? Look.
It wasn't Jack Hanna, but it was a coyote. And he came out, and he looked at me, and I looked at him, and he kind of went about. He didn't stop and talk or anything. He just kind of went right down our street. And
but he did give you that don't mess with me look?
He did kind of look, say, I don't think you want any of this.
Yeah, you don't want it. You want a piece of me? Hey, Annette, you want a piece of me? Yeah. You and your flowery watering can, you want a piece of me? I don't think so.
Was he carrying an Acme anvil?
No, it wasn't Wiley.
It wasn't Wiley.
No, Wiley lives at a different place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is a different coyote. This is Dave's coyote.
It's not my coyote. I don't want this coyote.
So in the bushes where he was, is that literally right outside your house?
Yeah, it was probably about 20 feet from where I was. Yeah.
You got to be careful, man, because they'll come up, they'll be in disguise, they'll knock on your door.
Mm-hmm. Well, I kind of warned our neighbors. Yeah. I went over
Candygram.
My neighbor wanted to take a picture of it. So I went and knocked on his door. He said, if you see a coyote again, let me know because I want to get my camera and come out and take a picture.
Why doesn't he just leave the doors open to his house and throw some meat on the floor?
He probably could do that. But I don't think we all have dogs, so we don't really want the coyote hanging
around. Well, let's be honest. Your dogs are more cats with more fur. They're small. They're little dogs.
Mine is. My neighbors aren't.
Yeah. Well, they have regular-sized dogs?
They have... My dog's regular size. No. He's a small breed.
Ozzy's a starter kit.
And they look like hostess snacks to coyotes.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's dangerous.
I know. So.
Just don't answer the door wearing your Little Red Riding Hood garb. That would be a whole new set
it's
of
not a wolf.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
That's a great point. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that. Mary, how about you? You good?
What do you mean?
All right, here's Mary with the traffic.
With animals?
Oh, wait, Steve, how was your night?
Oh, my night.
No, we're out of time.
I had to watch the finale of Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, who won?
Niall. Yes, Niall won.
Oh, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Good, yeah.
Which was my second choice. So
kid was amazing.
He was awesome.
He was amazing.
Dance with no music because he can't.
Yeah.
He can't hear.
Yeah, yeah, and then one of the final dances, he had a blindfold on.
Yeah, that was
so
really
couldn't see
mean,
couldn't
I thought.
Hear.
I go, gee, take away all his senses, the poor guy. That was terrible.
I believe we have a clip from last night's show. Do you have it ready? Yeah, fire.
Niall and Peta, Paige and Mark, the winners and new champions of Dancing with the Stars are...
That's great.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, Paige was awesome too, though. She was.
That's the ultimate fighter chick.
Yes, yeah. She was unbelievable.
And PETA is PETA Murgatroyd?
PETA is the one engaged to Max.
Oh, that's the guy that came in here and hated me.
Yes, the one with the jewelry.
He didn't hate you.
We had a little thing.
He loved Andre and I.
He did love you too.
Yeah, he did.
We had a little dude standoff. Is all.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, and I danced him under the table.
You clearly did.
Please.
You were afraid of him.
Oh, please. Who are you kidding?
It was great.
I need a dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need. Hey. Well, I need a dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need.
For those of you who've never heard Jordan Goodman on the show before, you go to moneyanswers.com, and oddly enough there you'll get answers on money. Jordan will get you all your answers, but you better have your digital device handy. Take some quick notes. Not while you're driving. More readily, there's this thing called a pen and paper, which I'm quite fond of, where you can write stuff down because he's going to throw some websites out and things you need to know. Jordan Goodman joins us live from, I assume, in New York. Is that where you are?
That's correct, Steve. Great to be with you again.
Good morning. Yeah. Good morning, and how are you?
It's been a pretty wild time, I must say. I mean, the stock market soars, it plunges on the same news every day. Yesterday it soared on the news that the Fed Reserve is pretty clearly going to raise interest rates. Their meeting is June 14th, 15th, and they've made it pretty clear that they're going to raise rates again. They did this last time in December. Didn't go so well. The stock market plummeted after that, January and February.
Yeah, January looked like it was Armageddon.
Yeah, that's right. And February was pretty bad, too.
But then it started to level off again. So what caused that leveling off in March and April?
I think oil prices is the difference. When oil prices go down, as strange as this may seem, that seems to mean the stock market goes down. When oil prices go up, the stock market goes up. So oil went down to like 25. Now it's up to about 49. So oil's almost doubled in the last 3 months, and that's made the stock market go up, which is kind of opposite of the way you'd normally think it would work, but that's the way it is these days. And I think that's related to the Fed Reserve. The Fed Reserve feels the economy is strong enough to raise interest rates. They'd like it to so-called normalize it, meaning getting it back. And they think rates have been too low for too long. And they're going to do something about it. And I think it's a mistake, but they're going to do it anyway. I mean, for example, look at the retailers. They've been getting killed out here, right?
Absolutely crushed.
Just crushed. That's a sign of weakness. Now, to some extent, people are buying things online and Amazon and so on. But, I mean, these stores are really, really getting hurt out there. And that's a sign of economic weakness as far as I'm concerned. And around the world, same thing. China's slowing down. Japan is in a funk. Europe is still. Europe has negative, deeply negative interest rates now. You go to a Swiss bank and they'll say, well, we'll give you minus 3%. We'll give you 97 cents back on the dollar. You don't earn anything. You lose more than other places.
They're going to charge you $3 to hold your $100.
Exactly.
Yeah. As opposed to you just holding it yourself.
Apparently, there's been a run on safes in Japan and Switzerland.
Makes sense, right?
It's better to keep your money in a safe than go and know in advance you're going to lose 3%. But that shows how much weakness there is in the world economy when you literally have negative interest rates. Looks like the European Central Bank is going to lower rates again deeper into negative. The central bank rate in Europe is minus 0.4%. And Mario Draghi, the head of the European Central Bank, said, well, let's lower it even. Let's go to minus 100%. How about that? That'll solve everything.
Let me back you up to the retail piece for a second.
Yes.
You know, I was harping on Uber when Uber first came out because I thought it's patently unfair, city to city, when medallions for cabbies cost so much money.
Yeah.
But in a free market, without legislation, those who do better win. Uber has clearly won that battle. However, don't we have to have some sort of standardized fairness in the tax rate buying online versus buying at retail?
Has. I mean, there are now.
Well, not in every state, though.
Not every state. It's state by state. You're right. I mean, for a long time, when the internet was just getting started, they wanted to support it, and that's why it was buying things tax-free online. Now it's state by state, and it is unfair, you're right, but that's the way it is. I mean, Amazon is a monster right now. Its stock has been soaring, and it's got a lot of political power as well, and people want to buy things cheaper. But it is hurting brick-and-mortar stores big time, and I think this is permanent. I don't think this is, though, this, you know, this is some short-term trend that's going to go away.
But like everything else, you can control the bleeding and stop the jobs from being thrown out so quickly. This is the mistake the record industry made. This is the mistake the newspaper business made.
Right.
When you had an opportunity. Newspapers used to run profit margins of what, 25, 30%?
That's right.
And instead of ticking it down, seeing the end was near and seeing the vision of the internet and going forward, and maybe next year you make 28 and the year after that you make 25 and the year after that you make 22, whatever the number is, they decided, oh, the internet's just a fad and it'll go away.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, their attitude was, let's make as much as we can now before the end comes. Okay, this has happened in many cases. The steel industry, the steel workers, for example, were charging extremely high wages and made U.S. steel uncompetitive until the business went away to China and Korea and so on. The idea is get as much as you can before it collapses.
That's but there's hundreds and hundreds of malls that were built in the 80s all over the country,
right,
which were centerpieces for communities that are now giant spaces that have a store and then three vacancies and a store and then three vacancies. So if people aren't going to go to the enclosed malls and they're not going to go to the strip malls, I still firmly believe, because this was a fear when the internet started as well, nobody will leave the house. People will leave the house. You do have to have interaction with other
human
beings. But You can't have retail jobs being thrown away by the thousands because legislators don't have the guts to do the right thing in every state.
Yeah. Well, what they feel is if they raise taxes on internet shopping and kind of equalized it, that they would, there's all kinds of threats. I mean, Amazon, for example, has distribution centers. So where are they going to put those jobs, okay, where there's not going to be taxes? So the internet world, and just think of the power of Facebook and Google and these internet giants now. They're running the world in many cases. In your business, and a lot of the advertising dollars that used to go to newspapers, radio, TV, traditional magazines, and so on, they're all going to Google and Facebook right now.
Right.
So that's why they've got all this economic power.
Well, and I saw a statistic over Christmas. 55% of holiday ordering was on Amazon.
Yep.
55%.
That's right.
It's unbelievable. It's
convenient. You can get whatever you want, have it delivered, and that's the way things are going. And I think they're only going to get bigger and bigger out there. So that's the reality of the world. You can try to stop progress, but that's the way things go.
I just think it's really incredibly stupid to not at least slow the roll so people have time to actually get different jobs as retail goes away, just to use that sector as an example.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going, the brick-and-mortar stores may be going away. But
that's what I'm talking about.
It's shifting. People are still buying things. They're just buying them online in many cases.
Yeah, get out of your house and go to a store situation.
Maybe nobody should ever get out of their house again. That would be
well, we're not,
out the cities.
You know, we're not fat enough as a country, so let's see if we can balloon up a little more. We'll talk about your personal finance coming up here after the news. Credit cards, housing, college loans. How much money's in Jordan's wallet? We'll get to all of that coming up. MoneyAnswers.com. 6:30, back with the big story next on 720 WGN. MoneyAnswers.com. We're going to tick off as many issues as we can here. Jordan Goodman's with us. You know, from the discussion before, Jordan, the one thing that I didn't ask, and a couple of texters have brought this up, is there any indication so far between Hillary and the Trumpster on what damage they may or may not do to the economy, or what good they may do?
Well, there's very different views. It's almost like two alternate universes between the two of them. I mean, Hillary basically would continue in a certain way, intensify the current direction, which is higher taxes. She wants to raise taxes all over the place and raise more regulation on labor, on environmental things. She wants to wipe out the coal business. I mean, a whole bunch of new regulations in various ways. And Trump wants to do the exact opposite. He wants to lower taxes. He wants to reduce regulations, more protectionist trade. It's like two completely different worlds. My concern about Trump is that he would make the deficit go up dramatically.
Right.
I mean, if you lower taxes, I'm just taking him at face value, Steve, for what he said he's going to do, if that happened. You're talking about lowering the corporate rate from 35% down to 20%, lowering the individual tax rate from 39% or so down to maybe 25%. That would stimulate the economy, I agree, but not enough to make up for the loss in revenue to the government. And therefore, interest rates would go up. And just that alone would add to the deficit. Remember, we're kind of sitting here with $19 trillion in debt, paying 0% for most of it, right, at Treasury bills. If that went from 0% to 1%, okay, it doesn't sound like much, that would be like $100 billion in new interest because of the amount we're paying. So raising interest rates could really hurt the economy and the stock market. So I think that's the kind of downside of Trump. So
and the trade pact piece of it, you know, which is also a Bernie Sanders yelping point about getting out of all these trade deals. It's an international, interconnected, global economy, and you can't put that back in a box.
You can't. Trump talks about America first, and he and with Sanders on a very similar situation, kind of protectionist, anti-trade kinds of things. You put a 45% tariff on China, a 35% tariff on Mexico, they immediately retaliate, which hurts our jobs. So, I mean, in Illinois, Caterpillar is a big exporter. They're going to get hurt really badly, something like that. Our farmers export a lot of grains around the world, and they would get retaliated against. There was actually just a recent case where Obama put a tariff on Chinese tires coming to the United States, $1 billion tariff. The next day, they retaliated with $1 billion tariff on American chicken going to China. So it's like, this is pretty obvious. This is what's going to happen. What you want is more trade, not less trade. Trade is already slow. We talked about the economy being slow. That's one of the main reasons for it, is trade's been down a lot. So it's going both, and Clinton's against a lot of these trade deals, too. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP, Clinton has now come out against as well.
So, yeah, well, she was for it before. She forgot she was for it. Now she's against
it. This is true. I mean, it's a very volatile environment. Last time I was on the show, I mentioned something that got a lot of response from listeners. I just want to mention it briefly, because in this violent, volatile environment, people don't know what to do with their money, and a lot of your listeners have it in cash sitting there earning nothing. I talk to them all the time. What I've been doing are what are called commercial real estate income funds, because that's a way of earning an 8% yield over 18 months minimum. Monthly checks, get your money back at the end of the year, you know, if you like it. So there's a website for that, commercialrealestateincomefund.com. And they got a phone number too, 888-444-2102. There's a way of earning 8% in an environment where otherwise you're sitting there earning literally zero.
Nothing's getting 8%.
Yeah, nothing. I mean, nothing. It's not taking huge amounts of risk. That's correct.
And Jordan, that's great, because I remember we talked about that last time. Are there fees to invest in that, or
none,
fees if you pull money out? Okay.
No, because what they're doing is they're earning more than 8%. They may be earning 10 or 11% or something.
That's how they make their money.
And they make their money by the spread over that, right? But they're charging the borrowers, because the reason this is so vital is that borrowers can't get money from banks today. Banks are flush with cash, but because of all the Dodd-Frank regulations, it's really, really difficult to get loans for commercial real estate improvement one way or the other. So they're willing to pay a higher rate for a short period of time to, you know, get a higher get the deals done, which otherwise isn't going to happen.
So they're like a bank for the strip mall or the Starbucks or the whatever.
Yeah, they do commercial properties. They do apartment buildings. Assisted living is a big thing these days, converting houses for assisted living. Could be medical facilities, some kind of commercial property that they want to improve. I'll tell you, I did one recently. There was a guy who had a big house in a university town, and he was renting it out to two students. He got one of these commercial bridge loans to renovate the house, and now he's got four students in there. He put in four kitchens.
Like double your income.
And he doubled his income. So for him, it was worth it to pay 11, 12% for a year, get this thing done, as his income's doubled forever. He couldn't get a loan from a local bank. That's a typical situation.
Amazing. Commercial Real Estate Income Fund, no S, right? Incomefund.com?
Correct. And again, 888-444-2102.
MoneyAnswers.com for a link on that. We'll do credit cards after the traffic.
Sure.
Mary's here with that on 720 WGN. Jordan Goodman, MoneyAnswers.com. Is the credit card debt in this country the biggest threat to our financial system? It's got to be top three.
Top three. I would put student loans at the top, but credit cards number two. The number just came out. We're up to $1 trillion in credit card debt. It had gone down to about $800 billion after 2008. Remember, everybody was having their credit card lines cut? Remember that?
Yep.
And the banks were being very stingy about it. Forget that. Now everybody's piling on the credit card debt again, up to $1 trillion. Very, very high interest rates, you know, 18, 25%, particularly if you're behind. About 40% of the people out there revolve their balance every month, 60% paid off in full. So that's very, very expensive. Remember, you're earning zero in your savings account and checking account, and to be paying 18 or 25% is ridiculous. So here are some things you can do. First of all, there are better credit cards out there in the country. A free website to find out all the best deals is Credit Card Perks, PERKS.com, all the best deals. Concentrate your spending on one or two cards where you're going to get the rewards you want, whether it be a frequent flyer mileage. I know Andrea wants Disneyland points, something like that.
I like the frequent flyers.
Whatever it may be, concentrate your spending, because otherwise you spend your money on 10 different cards, and by the time you get to the rewards, they've expired, right? So, you know, make sure you do that. And the second thing, if you have a lot of credit card debt and you don't want more credit cards, consolidate it with a nonprofit credit counseling agency that'll get you out of debt much quicker than you can on your own. My favorite there is called Cambridge Credit Counseling. Their website, cambridgecredit.org. Their phone number, 800-897-2200. They've helped a lot of GM listeners in the past. So they have deals with Chase and Bank of America and Citibank and Wells Fargo and all these places to get you rates of like 6-7% you can't possibly get on your own. You consolidate it all into one payment. You're going to close those cards, make a payment to Cambridge, and then within whatever, 2-3 years, you're out of debt instead of hanging this, have the hang over you for the rest of your life.
It gives you an opportunity to build your credit back up, whatever
Absolutely.
Your credit rating is.
Because if you're having a lot of credit card debt, it's really hurting your credit rating a lot. That's
Jordan,
correct.
Are you a fan of...
Hold on a second. Is he getting his living room mowed right now?
I am mowing the lawn while I'm doing the show, yes.
Jordan, are you a fan of transferring funds from one credit card to another?
You can. You get these 0% offers. Mm-hmm. You remember, there's a fee when you do that, typically like 3 or 4% of the amount you borrow. So it can cost you something up front. And if you pay late by 1 microsecond, it's not 0% anymore. It's 25%. So you got to be very careful and make sure you pay on time.
There's got to be a whole flanks of people at the credit card agencies that look like Dudley Do-Right, you know, with a handlebar mustache, and they're just praying that your card shows, your payment shows up late.
Exactly. Well, computers do it just as well, yes. So what happens, though, if you go from one card to another, Andrea, and you keep them all open, you go from A to B to C to D to E, if you have A through E open, that hurts your credit score pretty badly right there because you're adding what's called debt capacity,
right.
Too much potential debt, even if you just transferring the balance. So if you go from A to B, close A. If you go from B to C, close B. And then your total amount of credit outstanding is the same at lower interest rates.
I got another Air Mile card application in the mail the other day saying, hey, our Air Mile program is better. You know, airline A is better than airline B because we give you, you know, 2 points for every dollar.
Yeah.
So transfer with us, 0% down.
I'll tell you what I do. I have a JetBlue card. I get six JetBlue points for every dollar I spent. That's
wow.
The best deal I've seen.
Wow. And again, you don't have to have a credit card in your state. Arkansas happens to have the best rates in the country.
Correct, because they have usury ceilings that they can't charge more than 5% over the prime rate, which is 3.5%, so they can't charge more than 8.5%. You have to have decent credit, but that creditcardperks.com, I think you should have an Arkansas credit card. You know, it would kind of give you that southern feeling.
I've got a Hee-Haw Visa. Hee-Haw! Every time I charge it, that's the noise it makes. All right, one last thing before we run out of time. And by the way, the housing stuff is very important, but here's what I want you to do. You go to moneyanswers.com, and you can see all the resources. And by the way, many helpful books. Remember books? Many helpful books you can read as well. But do the credit cards for, or I mean the student loans before we run out of time.
Okay, so we just had all these graduations. So we've added $100 billion in new student loan debt to the existing $1.3 trillion. So we're closing in on $1.5 trillion in student loan debt. It's just crushing a lot of people out there. Two things you can do. Consolidate it. We have all these different loans at different interest rates. Consolidate it into one using the Federal Consolidation Program. A website for that, consolidatecollege.com. That can help you save a lot of money. And then you can refinance your student loans to as low as 2%. People don't seem to realize you can do that.
Because there's kids paying 6.5, 7, right?
Oh, yeah. That's on federal loans. Private loans can be 9, 10, 11, something like that. So you combine the federal loans and the private loans into one at the lowest possible rate, typically about 2%, if you have decent credit, and they can save yourself a ton of money. A place that does that is called Social Finance, and their website is SoFi.com, SoFi.com/moneyanswers. They know it's me that way, and you get the best possible deal. 2%, something like that, on all your student loans. You know, you pay them off quicker. They don't disappear, but at least it's going to pay them off quicker.
Yeah, and you know what? You should pay them off, but you should also do it at the best rate possible.
Absolutely. People don't realize that exists.
Moneyanswers.com. That's where you need to go. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you. I'm always glad to get their emails.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Talking with Governor Rauner. Has Cullerton been a big part of trying to push this quietly or more publicly?
Well, certainly not publicly. He has privately pushed, not quite as strongly as I'd prefer, but you know what? He's been more of a positive role than anything else. And, you know, frankly, if it were just he and I negotiating, we'd be done. Frankly, if it were just Mayor Emanuel and I negotiating, we'd be done. We've been held up by the other leader.
Can't figure out who he's talking about. So if we're just Cullerton and I, Madigan and no, he didn't say Madigan. Oh, that's the one. Yeah, it's Madigan. Pat Brady joins us. Eric Edelstein shortly. Did you hear Rauner yesterday on the show?
I did. Nice job.
Yeah, well, thanks for that. But my point being, you heard him just say that Rahm and Cullerton are not the problem.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear him lay that out, and I thought that was the nicest way to point out who is the problem without being too obnoxious.
So we have a matter of days now. We're down to days.
Six
days total. Are you optimistic? You were in touch with Springfield all the time.
I'm heading down there as soon as we finish. You know, I am optimistic that there are a group of rank-and-file people, Democrats and Republicans, that have been working hard for months on all these issues to try to get a deal. But here's what I think will likely happen. At the end of the session here, the 31st, the Speaker will submit a budget that's $4 or $5 billion out of balance, and he'll ship it to the governor. And as the Tribune opined yesterday, unlike last year, he needs to mandatorily veto it and cut it so revenues match expenses. And that is going to be a lot more painful to the social service groups or the pawn in this exercise than it would have been had they worked out a deal. But the bottom line is this, and this is what the governor ran on. He's running for the next generation and the current leadership down there, the problem, who likes this confusion and wants to run next fall on the fact that the governor's going to make these cuts, and he just won't make any deals.
Right. So politically, the headlines will scream, Rauner cuts this, Rauner cuts that. But he literally will be put into a position where he's the only one that could be the grown-up in the room and do what needs to be done to save the state from turning into Detroit.
Exactly. And that's exactly it. So that's my point. We're talking about somebody that's actually concerned with the next generation versus somebody that's concerned with the next election. And that's been the process here for the last many, many years.
I don't know how Madigan looks himself in the mirror, because he could be part of the solution here. And I gave him too much credit. And it wasn't because I was being generous. You know, going into the Rauner first year in office, I thought, well, okay, now look, Madigan's a smart guy. He's been around for a long time. He's not going to want his legacy to be the one that took down the state of Illinois, but he doesn't appear to care. And by the way, he's had every opportunity to come on this show and tell me I'm wrong. You know, and he ducks me like he ducks everybody else in this town.
But more important to me than that, which I agree with, is the people that are in the middle of this are the people that actually need the government services, the social service agencies. They're the ones that are, as I said before, the pawns in this. And it's brutal. And of all the things, and you pointed it out yesterday, you ran on 44, 45 things. We're down to three or four things that aren't radical. And aren't out of the mainstream that he wants to do to make this a place where business wants to come, so we have more taxpayers that can pay more taxes and make some structural reforms to the system and some very limited reforms to how unions operate in relation to local municipalities, and that's it. And in such radical things, and I'm kidding when I say that, like term limits and redistricting reform, which the state badly needs. So I don't understand why there can't be some accommodation.
Yeah, and if you're a Republican or a Democrat and you agree that this problem goes back a generation plus, why wouldn't term limits be the best answer you've ever heard? Because the people that are still in position were there when all this nonsense started. So many people like Madigan. Madigan, what, 40 years?
He was on the Constitutional Convention in 1969, 1970. He literally was on the team that wrote the convention.
So he literally has been here the entire time that this cancer...
You and I were in second grade.
That's exactly right. Was created and has developed into what's destroying the state. So isn't it time to term limit him into a nice retirement somewhere? Of course it is.
Well, he opposes term limits, and there are initiatives they're trying to get on the ballot for both redistricting reform, so he doesn't, whoever on either side, draw the map so you get to pick who's going to vote for you, and term limits, but he opposes them.
You look at the congressional map and the state political map. The districts in this state. Is there any state in the country that is more of a cookie crumbled on the ground than this state?
It's not just Illinois. It is a national problem.
But some of these districts are insane.
It's ridiculous. They're insane. It's ridiculous.
And that, you know, shame on us for losing in 2010. Had we won the governor's race, we would have had a say in the map, but the Democrats had got to draw it. It went to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. They upheld it, although they call it blatantly political. But we need term limits.
So the governor is asking, look, I don't care if you hate Governor Rauner. I don't care if you love Governor Rauner. The governor is asking for something that is beyond reasonable. I agree with your prediction on this. He'll get a budget that's completely out of whack. And then when you see the headlines over the next 6 months, the governor is killing this, the governor is killing that. That's because you're not reading the story. And the backstory is he was given a budget and he's the only one that could make those decisions. Because here's the rest of it. What happens if he kicks that budget back? Then we do another year of this?
Well, you know, if you remember in his State of the State address, too, he said, you give me the power right now to make the cuts and I'll do it. He's been asking for this power for a long, long time.
And the people that are in the most need are going to be the ones that are hurt the most. So, Madigan, explain that to me. 7:18. We'll come back. Eric Adelstein will join us in a moment. I also want to talk about why Hillary Clinton may be the worst candidate I've ever seen. And by the way, I'm including Donald Trump because Trump is what he is. But Hillary is a terrible, terrible candidate. And Eric Adelstein can explain to us how she's going to be electable. This was the great concern, by the way, when these two were running, and Trump got in later than she did because she'd been sniffing around it since 2008. But when they got in, the concern was they'd get in. It's now down to those two. Here's a bulletin, kids. One of them is going to be the next president of the United States. And the scary thing is one of them is going to be the next president of the United States.
Well, I'm on the floor, but I'm nominating Steve Cochran.
Yeah.
So you're
in. I second that motion.
You can be the VP.
I'm tanned, rested, and ready. I'm going to need 3 or 4 days a week off, and I only work between 6 and 10 a.m.
Although although this is just a thought. Just you get a jet thought. Though. But maybe you could be the nominee and you could be the VP. No.
We need a balance ticket. No. We need we need somebody older and more experienced.
Well, we could go with my age and experience to balance off your good looks and hair.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
You know what happened during the Great Recession. He actually said he was hoping for the crash that caused hardworking families in California and across America to lose their homes. All because he thought he could take advantage of it to make some money for himself.
She screams. It drives me crazy. I didn't say it. I can't listen. She goes, and Donald Trump is a terrible person. And he wanted to buy housing when it was at a low point. Who the hell doesn't? Who doesn't?
I feel like I'm out of words. I feel like there's nothing more that can be added at this point. You listen to the two.
I kind of like the music. Just leave this on for a while.
You listen to the two of them. And you just go, well, I got nothing. Well, I'm sorry, Eric, what?
Wait till October.
October, this is where I'll be in October. I'm going to be in a straitjacket going.
I think maybe, Eric, you said it a week or so ago. That might be the most watched event since the lunar landing.
Oh, the first debate?
The first debate.
What do you figure? Well, they'll probably do three, right?
Yeah, they typically do three
and then there's one vice presidential.
Yeah.
There's no more clarity on the vice presidential side again. You need somebody super young and actually, you know, hip and relatable.
Like Newt Gingrich for Trump?
Yeah, for Trump. Newt Gingrich for Trump would be perfect. Doogie Howser is really where I was going. But I don't know who the vice president will be. Here's what I know. Hillary Clinton has an opportunity against the biggest buffoon in history to turn this into a cakewalk, and she is, in fact, her own worst enemy. And I'm not talking about the lying, and I'm not talking about the track record. How could she be such a terrible candidate at this point? In other words, if you're doing the same thing every single day, you're out in front of the public, you're a politician, how come she's not getting better at it? Oh, and good morning, by the way.
Oh, hi. Hi. Nice. Thanks for having me on. Look, I think by her own admission, politics as a candidate is not something that comes naturally to her. She acknowledges that. I think she will find her voice in this campaign because the moment is, you know, to state the obvious, so big, not just for her, but for all of us, for generations, for what she really is the only thing standing between us and this guy. So, look, I'm hopeful once we get past California, once Sanders sort of gets his ball and goes home on the platform committee, he got his appointments yesterday, you know, that I think there'll be consolidation, and I think she'll get a comfort and a voice. She's running against an incredibly unorthodox, as 17 or 16 Republicans can attest to, a guy that's really hard to take on. Not because he's hard to criticize, there's so many things to criticize, but because it sort of just, he's like that bacteria that the more you attack it, the bigger it gets.
Yeah. It's true. It is.
But look, I think she will find her voice. I think she will win in a very comfortable electoral victory in this country. I think we are very polarized, but I think, as we've talked about repeatedly on this show, for any Republican, the demographics are very, very tough. For any Republican who's Donald Trump, the math becomes really daunting. Is it impossible for him to win? No. Is it really, really hard? Yes. And, you know, look, the other thing I would say in her defense, and I know you're going to jump all over me, so let me just say it.
I'm kind of tired. I don't think I'll jump.
All right. There's never been a woman elected president in this country. I'm and it's familiar. Not because there aren't women.
Wait. Are you including Millard Fillmore?
Okay, asterisk.
All right.
It's not because there haven't been qualified women. I mean, yes, it's only been 90 years since they could vote. That's one factor in the equation. But it's a really hard thing to overcome in this country. And I know it isn't just because she's a woman, but that is a factor that is a really difficult hurdle to get over that she's trying to accomplish.
Are you surprised? Because I am, to be honest with you. Are you surprised at the amount of women who have an issue with her, and particularly younger women?
It's a fascinating kind of generation gap issue where you have an older generation that feels
this is our time.
We fought these fights. You know, she needs to be there. And then you have this empowered younger generation who say, well, I thought everybody taught us it should be equal and gender shouldn't matter.
Right.
You know, it's sort of this kind of weird vibe. I cannot imagine, though, when all is said and done, That she doesn't win an overwhelming vote among women. Right now, the polls do show her with a huge lead among women. Obviously, she'd like it to be bigger, but I think it'll be there at the
but
end.
But that's a surprising amount of women. You and I were talking about this. There's a surprising amount of women. And by surprising, I mean more than one women who actually support Trump.
No, that's very true. What I found, what I at least have found with different people I've interviewed, is I would say under 30 are more likely to support Hillary as opposed to the older demographic.
Oh, you say it the other way.
I do, yeah, because they're the ones who remember the Vince Fosters and the Clinton mess and the scandal, and they don't want any more Clintons, quote unquote. That's their whole.
That's interesting. Right, it's interesting.
A little bit of that. Yeah.
I think there's a divide, and sometimes we talk about it as a Title IX divide. I think when you had Title IX, which for those who don't know, basically meant that women in college sports had the same opportunity, same scholarship, same programs as men. That you had a generation of girls and then young women, which is great, who said, you can compete. You can do anything a boy can do. It isn't just talk. It isn't just rhetoric. I think the girls and women who graduated in that class grew up in a world that said nothing should hold us back. Right. Gender shouldn't be the defining measure of who we are successfully, professionally, socially, culturally. And I think some of them, it's ironically, Hillary has struggled with them.
Can the vice president serve longer than 8 years?
I think he can.
So do I.
You're talking about you making the campaign for Uncle Joe to stick around a little longer?
I thought about it driving in this morning. Yeah. I don't think it's a bad idea.
The only
for
constitutional limitations on the president, right?
The constitutional isn't the exact constitutional limitations on the president the same as the vice president?
I don't think so.
I have to go read it.
I know.
It doesn't
in
come
law school,
up,
we never got around to that, did we?
No, we did.
It doesn't come up.
We're reading about torts.
Torts, yeah.
It doesn't come up for obvious reasons, but having said that, with no clear choice for her that has any sort of, you know, thump, why not Biden? Have you ever had a convention where you're doing this for the vice president? 4 more years! I don't think so.
Biden, for all his missteps he had early on 8 years ago, is been a pretty strong vice president, very popular.
He's a really smart guy. He says a lot of things.
Foreign policy, good.
Yeah, foreign policy, really good. And a guy who knows every inch of the Senate and could do some work in Congress. And frankly, helped Obama in Congress when he didn't help himself.
Well, it's also like the backup quarterback syndrome on the bad team.
Yeah.
You know, with a guy who's not playing, not in the game, you always rate him higher. The fact that he didn't run for president sort of makes his stock go higher. So yeah. It's an interesting idea.
Yeah. So, and if not that, Doogie Howser.
How about Sarah Palin?
Sarah Palin is tanned, rested, and ready. Okay. How about Sarah Palin and Newt Gingrich? Kind of a co-vice presidency, because you know, we're so sick of both of them, we'd have to switch them off. We have to platoon them. Let's come back with a big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
I think Bill Clinton has done a terrific job. I don't think he's been treated very fairly.
Paula Jones is a loser.
She's married to a man who hurt many women, who got impeached for lying.
Look at the trouble Bill Clinton got into with something that was totally unimportant. And they tried to impeach him, which was nonsense.
Yeah, Steve Cochran Show continues. Gary Johnson is the candidate for the Libertarian Party. I see numbers now where he's polling in some states 8, 9, maybe 10%. Who's he hurt?
Unclear. I think that you will have a, I don't think there's any surprise to anybody, don't be a great political genius, that there will be a huge vote for other in this election, whether it's Gary Johnson or Mickey Mouse on the
or
ballot.
Steve Cochran.
Or sure. Steve Cochran. Well, Steve would do even better. But I think it remains to be seen. Look, I think we don't really know the contour of this race until Hillary officially wraps up the nomination. She consolidates those Democrats in a similar way that Trump is consolidated. And then I think we'll know which way the third party is chipping into it. But
look at two. He hasn't raised much money at all. Trump hasn't compared to her. He's running a strategy that he's told the RNC, even though there have been donors that give millions and millions of dollars to build a database so you can actually identify your voters and get them out, which I think is politics 101. But if she goes into September at 52-53%, this thing's over.
Yeah. You know, there's one thing that it's so easy to get caught up in the cable news wars. I just want to give a little context. So cable news, combined CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, you're probably looking at, on a nightly basis, 3, 4, 5 million people.
Yeah.
Combined are watching
all of them.
That. combined.
Yeah, all of them, right.
Right? So everyone says, oh, Trump dominates all this news coverage. There's going to be 125, 130 million Americans. There are tens of millions of people who never watch cable news, who Pat's point is dead right. The infrastructure of a presidential campaign costs $1 billion or so. She has it. He doesn't. And I think that
can
be...
And he's not even going to use the RNC.
He's not going to use the RNC.
He's going to do what he did in the primary. Remember, he didn't do it. It was a fly-in.
And that makes a huge difference, particularly when we're talking about, oh, it comes down to 6, 8, 10 states, when you can really dominate those local news markets with television advertising.
It's figure out the number of voters you need, find them, and get them out.
That's right.
And he's skipping those.
I think what's really, really concerning, too, and we touch on this in the news, but not so much maybe in discussions, they're both polarizing. You either love or hate either candidate. But when you have violent rallies and protests where police officers are being punched and kicked, that's got to stop. I don't know.
Last night, the anti-Trump people, they just give Trump all the fodder he needs when they're beating up cops
right.
and throwing things at cops. I mean, that's not acceptable.
Mm-mm.
You know,
not at all.
Slam Sanders for what happened in Nevada, but you know, you got to be fair about it and say the anti-Trump people are just nightmares.
Just helps Trump.
Here's the difference on the polarization, and I completely agree, Andrea, in terms of them both being polarizing. But one is a potential person that is dangerous. Yeah. Now, I know there's people on the right who think, oh, Hillary Clinton's dangerous and all that, but she's not dangerous. You might disagree with her. You may not like her. You may find her irritating. She's not dangerous to our constitutional way of government and what happens in the sort of history of America. The other guy is a con man and a fraud and a liar, and he is dangerous. So the polarity, I don't think, is equal, and I think people need to know that.
Question is, will the independents connect with that message?
Well, we hope it will.
Andrea,
the thing is too, Steve, like you pointed out with Chuck Todd, and she doesn't have a message. She's got to get some kind of message. It can't be every word.
Well, I will give you credit. You've been talking about a lack of an aspirational message from her the entire year. And again, I understand how you could do something every day and not get better. It's like watching Conan O'Brien do a monologue. You've been doing it for 20 years. How are you not funny?
Every word is parsed. And these are the people that took a poll to figure out where to take a vacation in 1994. Remember that?
I would like to see her have a platform, too, instead of just refuting all the Trumpisms.
Yeah, I mean, if you said Hillary Clinton's the next president of the United States, okay, what's she going to do in the first 100 days?
Go to Mount Rushmore.
Make sure the portrait looks good.
Put her little thing. That's where my head's going to be.
Texter, Andrea, my daughter, and you're totally right. Andrea, my daughter and her 20-something aged girlfriends, are all talking Hillary. My boomer girlfriends say no way. They are stuck on Monica, Clinton scandals, Benghazi, et cetera.
Right.
Which I hadn't thought about that you brought it up because it's a flip of what you and I were talking about. So you guys still have ducked the vice president question. I don't know what's going on over there on that side of the room, but clearly the two of you know who the running mates will be and you're not willing to tell us. So Mary, do the traffic and we'll get the answer to the vice presidential question in a moment.
It's a little bit early to talk about that. Right now, our function is to do everything I can, George, and you're going to see me run it all over California. We're in New Mexico now. We're going to do everything that we can to get every vote and every delegate that we can and go into that convention with as much momentum as is possible.
Didn't hear a no.
George Stephanopoulos with Bernie Sanders the other day talking about the vice presidency.
You know, Bernie could take Larry David and they'd really stay on message. That'd be the perfect VP, wouldn't it?
That would. There'd be a lot of shouting, though.
Yeah, but right on message. Nothing would change. That's
Bernie and Larry. It sounds like a deli.
Never off message. That would be perfect.
Texter says, can't wait for President Trump to tell Congress it's none of your business. Here's the thing, kids. I love that you listen. I appreciate it. But you have to have a little bit more of an understanding of the fact that Congress has the same amount of power as the president. It's just a different kind of power. And so does the Supreme Court, which is why we need that ninth justice, which has come up in the past couple of weeks as well. I'm nuts. I want somebody who can actually help the country, you know? Not someone that's going to be, it's all about me.
That'll be interesting. Eric was laying out about Hillary. Maybe she doesn't have to come up with something. She just lets him kind of blow up because he seems to be getting incrementally worse every day with the comments he makes. And when the independents that are going to make the decision here on the next president start really paying attention, I just can't imagine they're going to go that way.
You guys have advised candidates forever. If you know a weakness in your candidate, do you exploit the weakness knowing that they're going to be returned fire, and in this case, maybe at an unprecedented level? Is that the only way to fight Trump, get under his skin constantly?
Well, I think you have to be careful. It's the proverbial you don't want to lead with your chin, and you don't want to play a game on somebody else's turf. You know, he's a knife fighter. I do think, but Pat's onto something though, because it's a little bit like you know, a drug addict having free reign of a pharmacy. This guy craves attention. He's going to now have the biggest stage in the world. I'm not sure he can handle it. It's so
addicting.
That's
a temperament question,
right? It's so addicting to him that he may, if he hasn't already come unraveled, be even more so.
Well, at some point, somebody's going to start talking a little bit of policy. Like, he doesn't line up with Republicans on anything, trade, health care, taxes, foreign policy. I mean, he's the one that was advocating giving Japan nuclear weapons. That's not working out so well for the president.
And what happens when you have business people starting to say, here's what's going to happen the day Trump's elected. The stock market's going to plunge 1,000 points. We're going to have huge confidence issues in terms of American corporations. It's going to be a disaster for our economy. I mean, that's going to start to happen.
Well, I had a nice long conversation with a congressman over the weekend from here who told me that been in the Middle East, said the big fear over there is a Trump presidency. They're scared to death this guy's going to
be president. Huge in the UK. In the UK, they're constantly talking about, whoa. We thought you guys were kidding.
Right.
You know, now it's real. Now it's scary. Here's the rest of this when it comes to Trump and Hillary. Words matter. And if this candidacy or this campaign gets as bad as it appears it's going to, the rest of the world reflects on who is running for president and the campaign. The campaign's going to be world news every single day. The office is more important than the person that sits in the office. This goes back to when George Bush was president. It was not a small deal when everybody was calling George Bush an idiot, because you're disrespectful to the office. The person's only there for a limited amount of time. Either one of these people has to take over that office after a very damaging campaign and then put a Band-Aid on it. That scares me as well.
Well, that's why the whole campaign is going to be so damaging to our country, I think, regardless of the outcome, because our status around the world does matter. It's not just an image thing. It has a huge impact on how we're perceived. And I think we're a laughingstock right now. And I think that's only going to get worse between now and November, hopefully, in a Hillary Clinton presidency and beyond. The constitutional structures that we have put in place, you know, we've survived crises before. We have survived worse. And hopefully there's a resilience there in the system, in a constitutional system that's been genius for 250 years, that will survive this as well.
I think this is I don't mean to be the pessimist in the room, because I'm not, but this is the biggest domestic problem we have, these two running for president. It's bigger than the economy. It's bigger than everything else going on in the country. This is the number one domestic problem in America, the two people who are going to represent the two parties running
for president.
But can
anyone right now,
because one of them has to win,
except maybe Eric, name what either of them stand for policy-wise?
No.
There's just nothing. It's all been Trump personality, cult of personality. That's all the whole campaign has been. And that is.
There's no elevator pitch. There's no 15 seconds. Tell me what you will.
Well, make America great
again. Look, we can disagree on message. She's an incredibly substantive person. She is in depth on policy.
No doubt. But does anybody know what it is?
Right. I understand what you're saying. But he has so taken the oxygen on the cult of personality in this. Look, there is one idea on vice president that could change this whole fundamental dynamic. And I don't know who picks the person, but if someone picked Cheney, that might increase everybody's popularity in this election and could just save the Republic. I'm just saying.
How about Meghan Trainor?
That's a good idea, too.
Don't we have enough negatives? Don't we need like a Mr. Rogers figure at this point? Somebody could come in.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood, you know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood, well, kiss me, kiss me.
Dean Richards live from Channel 9. I don't know what it is. We've played your theme song every day.
It's singable.
Yeah, and then we're talking about 657 shows, and every day I love hearing it.
I sing along with it every day. I enjoy it.
But you know, I'm different. I love you more than white guys should. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, you do.
It's right there in the lyrics.
I know you do. We'll find out how much you do. I'm told on Friday that you're going to be introducing me and interviewing me. Something during
I don't have that kind of time. No, I am the I usually MC, and I will again. I'll MC the Walk of Fame ceremony. Steve Bertrand, a Walk of Fame honoree, is going to co-MC the situation. 7 honorees, an induction ceremony Friday, 10 a.m. right outside the Tribune Tower on Pioneer Court. By the way, I didn't mention this to you two, but you guys, Andre and Dave, are doing the show tomorrow, Dean. And then if you guys could also do the show Friday morning around 9.
Yeah.
I need to get into makeup.
You have to. Hair and makeup.
Needs to get into a zone.
Ahead of the.
No, I just thought it might be important if I actually looked at the notes prior to actually doing the
show.
He
has to get together with the writers.
Yes. And, his people.
I go, can we punch up these Max Armstrong jokes?
You sure you need a whole hour for it?
No.
But I need a Marilyn Miller joke now.
You have some of those.
Yeah, I had an embarrassing incident with Marilyn Miller, who's one of the sweetest people you'd ever meet, where I inadvertently sent a reply to an email to... it's a story I can't tell on air. But I sent a reply to an email to one of our salespeople, a dude.
Yeah.
Thought I was sending it to him, sent it to her.
It was a pretty dudesy email, too, if I remember.
It was a dude thing to say.
It was dude language.
It's not something that you want to send to one of...
To a very nice one.
A really nice person.
And then he ran back to tell her like a 12-year-old, and then I ran back to apologize, and she said, oh, it's all right. I raised boys. I understand.
She's so nice.
So come on out. Enjoy the celebration commemorating Max Armstrong, Floyd Brown, Jim Carillo, Dan Fabian, Marilyn Miller, Tom Peterson, and Dean Richards. You can also follow the live blog online at WGNradio.com. Again, it's Friday morning. 10 a.m. we'll start, and Dean, you're going to be out there Friday morning doing TV, right?
I am. We're going to be out there all morning. I don't know exactly know what we're doing out in the courtyard, but I hope we'll be able to intertwine the TV and the radio-ish thing.
Yeah, we're going to do something wacky. Simulcast.
We're shooting a pilot, Steve and I, for when the CW is off WGN.
It's a
television version of this segment.
It's a buddy comedy, and it's called Bowling Balls because it just starts with a one shot at the top of our heads. Shia LaBeouf's at it again. Amy Schumer's at it again. Paul McCartney reveals something the world didn't know. Can you imagine you didn't know something about Paul McCartney of the Beatles? Got a Cosby update, and a woman named Khaleesi had her clothes on when she talked, and she usually doesn't.
As far as you know.
Listen, it's none of my business what's happening with you and her.
You can travel Chicago. You'll be calling his name. Dean Richards, the entertainment editor, Channel 9 and 7.
824. Dean, I'm not sure we've closed the deal on this, but I think John DeCosta will be reporting from the red carpet on Friday.
Is there a red carpet?
No, but
it's a little
theater of the mind.
We're going to put out some floor mats.
I was going to say a little red piece of paper I think they're going to put out there.
I thought a couple of floor mats that say welcome. So those type of things.
Nice.
Paul McCartney revealed what?
This is really interesting. Beatles broke up in 1970, and really for the first time, he revealed that he went through a really serious bout of depression after the Beatles broke up, in his mind saying, what do I do to follow this? He compared it to being in a war, that you're with these same guys all the time. You go through some unbelievable highs and lows. You're in battle every day, and then suddenly you're gone. It's like an army unit breaking up, is how he described it. And he talked about that's how he began his heavy drinking. I think we've got some audio of Paul in this BBC radio interview recently talking about this.
Yeah, it was very depressing, because you were breaking from your lifelong friends. And we used to liken it to the army, where you'd been army buddies for a few years and now you weren't going to see him again. We were growing up, we're getting married, and you live separately. So, it was depressing. And with all the business stuff still going on, and not knowing whether I was going to continue in music, that was kind of depressing.
Seriously, what you thought for a moment, this is it?
Yeah, because the thing was, how are you going to do it? Mm. If you're going to do it, you can't play all the instruments yourself on stage. So how are you going to do this?
I think you should do all your interviews with an English accent from now on.
It does sound better. It's fairly remarkable when you think about it that they never got back together.
Right.
Because I remember, and you remember, Dean, from when we were little kids, there was always this rumor every year of some sort of Beatles reunion, and it just never happened.
Probably would have happened at some point, if for nothing else, just the amount of money that would have been involved in something like that. But... just 10 years after the Beatles broke up, John Lennon was killed. George Harrison died several years after that. I think that just the timing was not there.
And Paul and Ringo have done some things together, right? Though never anything formal.
Yeah, they appeared, was it at the Grammy Awards? Or one of the award shows they performed together and did some Beatles songs. That was pretty moving. And pretty much when you go to a McCartney show, it's like, I think it's like as close as we're ever going to get to being at a Beatles concert, because he happily does all of those classic songs that we all grew up
with. The most amazing thing to me about a McCartney show, I'm not kidding about this, the guy's 72-ish, right?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. He plays 3 hours and never pees. He stays on stage the entire time.
As far as we know.
You know what? That's silly. Of course, with modern technology, anything's possible.
That's right.
What's the Cosby update?
The latest is he is going to be going to trial. With all the allegations that have come out, many of which will never go to trial because of statute of limitations. There was one case in which Andrea Constand back in 2004 accused him of drugging her and then sexually assaulting her. He says the whole thing was consensual. She says it was not, but a judge yesterday in a pretrial hearing determined that there was enough evidence to proceed with the trial. So that is going to begin soon. And if he is convicted, could spend 10 years in jail.
Which, at his age, is obviously a life sentence, or it could be. It's funny. Listen, his wife, I don't know how to process, her part of this, because obviously it wasn't her that committed these crimes, it's him, or was accused of these crimes. But can you imagine that household now? You're Bill Cosby. You were Bill Cosby, and now you're this Bill Cosby. She still is defending him publicly, but what the hell could their life be like now?
Yeah, you go from being one of the most revered and most respected figures, in public life. You symbolize fatherhood and all that's good and all that, and then one allegation led to another allegation.
Camille's a very recognizable woman. I mean, she was never, out there as a celebrity, but she was photographed plenty. So, everywhere she goes, she's being judged.
Can't imagine what's that like when the doors close.
Amy Schumer is a big star now, and she's had this whole body shaming campaign that she's been on to fight. Where's that at?
Well, she had posted some pictures on the internet of a vacation in Hawaii of her in a bathing suit. And if you look at these pictures, she looks like a normal person in a bathing suit.
Right.
She's not a Barbie doll. She's not that kind of configuration. But she attacked back at some people who were posting unpleasant things, as it always happens in any comment section of anything that's on the internet. And she wrote, "Good morning, trolls. I hope you found some joy in your lives today in a human interaction, and not just in writing unkind things to a stranger that you've never met who triggers something in you that makes you feel powerless and alone." And then she said, "I feel happy. I think I look strong and healthy." Period.
Well, good for her. I'm not sure why she's trying to light up the commenters. I think ignoring them would be better.
It's always the best thing to do. But, at some point, enough's enough. I mean, these trolls, as she calls them, are probably getting off that she responded, because it obviously bothered her enough to do that.
Yeah,
but good for her. I mean, she is a normal person. She's a normal person.
Whatever you think of her comedy, sticking up for the fact that she's not the skinny girl is just fine. Shia LaBeouf is a kook, and I hesitate to publicize him, but I got to admit, I'm fascinated with the stuff this guy does.
This is my favorite story of the day, Steve, because this is the Shia LaBeouf that, in the name of art, a performance art project, sat at a table in a window of a store with a paper bag on his head. In the name of art, rode in an elevator for 24 hours up and down, and it was all on the web. And now you can follow him hitchhiking across the country. Fans, he's got some kind of electronic device on him, so we know from GPS coordinates exactly where he is at any time. And fans are going on the road.
Whack job.
They're going on the road, following him, picking him up. He's basically going from fan to fan to fan in this new performance art piece that he's doing. And if you go to takemeanywhere.vice.com, you can see exactly where he is right now. If you want to get in your car and
What's the end game here? I mean, I know he's a nut, but what's the end game here? Is he selling advertising on his website?
No. Steve, you just don't understand performance art.
No, I really don't.
This is art. You just I don't. This truly, is truly this don't. Is above you and I. This is above our pay level.
I don't get it.
I checked about an hour ago. He is in North Central Colorado with fans. He's in somebody's car near the St. Vrain Creek in North Central Colorado. Thankfully, nowhere near here. Thankfully, nowhere near the Michigan Avenue Walgreens store, where he remains their most famous customer.
Well, if something awful happens to him on the road, at least we'll know who did it, because he's tracking every step of the way.
Oh, we'll know where it happened anyway.
And we don't have time to run the tape, but Khaleesi from Game of Thrones seems to be... I don't watch the show, but I get that it's a huge deal.
It is. It is.
And Khaleesi keeps taking her clothes off, which I guess helps.
She may be the most naked person on television right now, and I got to sit down and talk with her.
And you're running that all morning on TV, so people can see it right there.
We are going to run it more on TV. We're going to run the whole interview, not this weekend, but the first weekend of June, when her new movie called Me Before You, that's based on the best-selling novel about a woman who's a caretaker for a quadriplegic man. They fall in love.
Is that Khaleesi?
That's Khaleesi.
I didn't recognize her.
That's Emilia Clarke. She looks so different than Game of Thrones.
Wow.
Talks about the movie, talks about Game of Thrones. So we'll share that interview in a week or so on the Sunday morning show.
All right, buddy. See you later.
Bye.
Dean Richards, and back with a big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
8:42, there was a hug research that came out a while ago. We tried to demonstrate a proper hug here on the show. And, it was fine. I mean, it was better for me than it was for you.
I thought it was okay. Yeah. I mean, we were trying to figure out which
So let's just review. As a woman, how do you want to be hugged by a man? And do you want to be hugged by a man when you greet a man? Well, or does it depend on the man?
Depends on the man. Definitely.
Okay, so a proper hug from a man would be someone who is a friend.
Yes.
What about...
Relative.
A relative, okay. What about at work? Is a work hug appropriate?
Oh, yeah.
Not at show business, like in a general work environment. Show business, you know, people touching each other all day.
Yeah, we hug all the time.
And Dave's all hands.
Yeah. Yeah, that's okay.
With me.
I know. That's got to stop. But in general, I mean, we hug all the time, all of us.
Yeah, but at work... Hey, Sandberg, come out for this, will you? So you go to the side, right? You do the side thing because you don't want to press your boobs up against a stranger or a dude, because any sort of boob pressing is at an as boob pressing needed basis.
I think actually boys seek out pushing into our boobs. You make it seem like we're walking around pushing our boobs
who
out on
Who do
people.
You think we are? I mean, you're right, but I'm just asking you, who do you think we are? But that sort of turn away. Now, is there a message from that? Does the turn during the hug, are you sending a message?
Yes, get away from me. Clearly. There's way too much hugging here, I think.
You've been in the show business forever. This is the only place you've ever seen hugging?
Oh, no, there's too much touching in show business.
Yeah.
Davis does it right. When I was leaving for vacation last week, he said, have a great time, and he gave me a high five. And I thought, that is so appropriate of the right amount of touching, not like...
See, I totally disagree. Maybe it's the Greek thing, but every time... I go on vacation, Mary Vandeveld will say, or I'll do the same to her. Like, she's going away this weekend. I'll say, have a good weekend, be safe, we'll give each other a hug.
Well, you guys are like sisters.
Yeah, but I'm just not, based on what you just said for Dave, I'm trying to remember how I told you to have a good vacation.
See, I would feel weird.
Because I feel like that was your way of calling me out, and I don't even know what I did.
I mean, pulling me on your lap is a little bit too much.
Right, and then singing a song.
Forget high five. I would feel weird if Dave gave me a high five, I think, Dave. Yeah. Wouldn't you? Because I've known Dave a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I've worked with Mary longer than anyone here.
Yeah,
so if
Dave gave me a high five, I'd say, like, yeah, but I've given Jake hugs,
and he's new.
You don't know what he says back there, though.
But Jake, you're totally giving you a hug?
Jake,
but he's cute.
Jake, are you uncomfortable
with
hugging?
First off, I'm adorable.
Yeah, he is.
Just be honest.
He's huggable.
Yeah.
Jake, do you not like hugging?
I like a good hug.
Yeah.
You have
it
to be hug-
feel warm and
I think certain people
embraced.
Are huggable.
They're hug-worthy.
Or huggy.
But Mary's not a hugger, right?
Well...
You don't like when people touch you.
Yeah, I like my space is my space.
She doesn't like people. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I don't like people.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah,
I forgot
like
about
people.
That. One time in my last job, something bad happened and I was really upset. I was crying and a person that did not like me. We didn't like each other or get along, but he felt compelled to hug me because I was crying and it was so like
awkward.
Nice but awkward. But yeah.
What's it like to hug doll? Oh, you weren't talking about Dalton. Nice. Sorry. Okay. All right. So going forward, I didn't know this was going to be about you, but going forward, we're putting you on the no hug zone.
You can put your like arm around my shoulder.
But no hugs.
No, I mean, I'll hug you. I always hug David Hochberg.
Well, really? God, of all people, the hug?
I'd be careful with that because he could be going for your purse.
Okay, Pat Brady and Eric left the studio. I gave him a little hug goodbye. Would you do that?
No, I wouldn't.
But you'd hug Hochberg. He's so not huggable.
Really? You don't think Hochberg's huggable?
Oh, no. Well, I want him doing my mortgage and he saved me a lot of money, but he's not really huggable. Right. Do you think, Dave, would you hug him?
If he saved me a lot of money, I would hug him.
That's probably why.
No,
I'm
but that's
him.
A whole different category. There's, bro hugs.
He seems like he'd be a frantic hugger. Hochberg.
Come here, get away,
like a quick, gotta go.
Sometimes, though, I'll grab somebody, a dude.
Yeah, I wouldn't say, though.
I'm making sure I clarify that. Yeah. I go in and hug a dude basically because I know it's going to make him a little uncomfortable and I'm amused by it. Come on, get over here, give me a hug, that kind of thing.
You should hug Dave.
Hugged someone the other day. I don't know if it was Pat McGann or somebody who came in and you gave him a big hug.
Yeah.
Another, a bro
hug. A friendly
hug.
Guy.
A dude.
But, I mean, there is that whole guys hug much more than I remember growing up.
Oh, yeah.
It was always a hearty handshake.
Oh, we never hugged.
Yeah.
Never hugged.
No. Yeah, like my son hugs all his friends all the time.
What?
Yeah, well, that was a 90s thing. That whole thing started in the 90s. I remember
kids in their 20s hug all the time.
Yeah,
they do.
In the 90s, that replaced the standard greeting, with high schoolers.
Right.
Because it was the way to get through puberty. He touched a girl. But the bro hug thing is different than the girl hug, and really this is where the conversation started. So it's okay to hug, but you need to know me, and you need to pick up on the cues of whether or not, like, you know who's good at this? Patty Vasquez. I've seen Patty Vasquez get hugs from somebody, and she'll go, oh, we're hugging. And, it's like a cry for help. It's like she's a hostage at that moment.
She says it out loud. I wouldn't say it out loud. I would say it behind their back, like, oh. No, although I like hugs. I don't think I would ever not.
Is this another thing where we got to wait for you to initiate it? We got to wait for you to move in for the hug?
Yeah.
Good God, you speak a different language.
Yeah.
And then if we don't hug you and you expected a hug, we're going to be in trouble. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay, just to be clear.
The further the butt is out, the worse the hug. The more awkward the situation is.
Do you want hips to touch?
No,
but you do that. You do that. You guys do that. You may not even do it instinctively. Like if the butt goes out, it's a boob protection thing again.
Right.
If you can't go with the side thing, you go here, and that way I'm not touching you with my boobs.
We'll have to try it. You guys need to get over this fetish thing. I mean, I should take you to a ballroom class.
What do you mean fetish?
Because then you got to dance with people, and you have to kind of be close.
Mary's
to them.
Out.
Sandberg's not dancing. She's not even touching people. She's not dancing.
I don't have a fetish. I mean, I'll hug anybody.
No, I mean, are you afraid
Well, not anybody.
Of it?
You're not
afraid
You're not
of
discriminating.
It.
Like, I want to be special. Only if
right.
If
she doesn't
Sorry,
want
I'll
hug
anybody.
Yeah. But don't be afraid of it. I mean, if you dance with people, in ballroom dancing, you just...
yeah, come here, Benedict.
You
come
have
here,
to here, dance
here
with everybody.
Go. Wait, let me
see. Okay, Benedict,
let me
Cumberbatch, and Steve are now embracing... Pat the
Wait, do it again.
The patting on the back.
That was like
mutual patting.
Thank you, miss. Now, come on in.
Oh,
and
now
Steve just hoisted Bennett.
Wait, it didn't. All right, now it's starting.
Bennett's like a foot taller than Steve,
right,
too.
That's like a father-son hug. Yeah, that's cute.
That was Bennett, a little awkward because he is a lot
so
taller than you.
Lighting.
Look a little weird, did it?
This would look even weirder because I'm a lot shorter than Bennett.
Go ahead, give him a hug.
Come on.
Okay.
Dave's reluctant.
Okay, fine.
Oh, come on, Dave.
All right. I feel like I've broken down a lot of walls with you, Dave. You never used to tell anybody you love him. Now you're hugging people.
So does that mean you're done with the hug when you go, all right?
You
walk
away quickly.
Yeah, that's what you just said. You said, all right.
All right. All right. So have we learned anything here?
I think just Andrea or Mary could hug me.
I'll hug you.
A girl hug.
Yeah. I feel that feels totally fine.
But we need to just let the rest of the staff know that there should be a 5-foot no hug zone around you at all times.
Well, when I sat at that, I was at that other position when I first started working here, and I was at a desk that was accessible to everybody.
Right.
And every single person I knew that came by hugged me. And it was like, my full time job was just handing out hugs.
Right.
I wanted a little.
You said enough.
Yeah.
But if Jimmy DeCastro came to hug you, you have to hug him.
Oh, I love hugging Jimmy. Yeah,
you have.
Jimmy can hug. He can kiss. He can
you are such a suck up. Listen to you.
You can pull a page out of Dave's playbook and go, all right.
Okay. I didn't even realize I did it.
It's on
all
right, tape.
So the safe thing for men would be just be wait for the invitation.
Yeah.
And I mean literally, wait for the invitation. By email, by text, it's okay to hug me now.
Read our body language.
Oh, yeah, that's easy.
Well, if we come at you with our arms open, obviously, that's a hug.
Yeah, okay.
All right. If you just stand there, then...
I just feel badly for, like, Marta the cleaning woman and the male people. I just go around the whole building hugging everybody. Security guys. Remember that guy that quit? Why is Cochran hugging me again? There's a guy in India who just set a world record for most hugs in a minute. You can see the video. We'll post this. I'll send this to you. Can I send this to you? Oh, wait. Well, that's different. I don't need your approval to send it to you.
No, you can send
that's
it
not
to
like
me.
A hug.
Sure.
It's an Indian man who took on a record challenge for most hugs in a minute. His name's Krishna Kumar, and it was at a school in a town called Pradesh in India. He managed to hug 79 different people in 60 seconds. Dave, you could do that because of your clutch and grab and get rid of move that you just
exhibited
there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you just have to keep moving.
Yeah, hug, dispatch, hug, dispatch, hug, dispatch. But that's more than one. That's 1.19 hugs per second or something like that.
Did he move to each new huggy, or did the huggies each move to
him? They lined up. Yeah, they lined up and leaned in.
That's a lot of hugs.
That's 79 hugs in a second.
You need a lot of Purell in between each one of those.
No joke about that.
And then the last bit of our hug news here on Hug Corner is dogs. Don't hug your dog.
Why?
Why?
Study that came out. Dogs don't like it. Study that came out recently by the people at... Don'tHugYourDogs.com. People said, don't hug your dog because when you hug a dog and the dog sort of pushes away. Dogs feel it's an aggressive move. This, according to study, I don't know what I'm talking about. Reach in when you hug the dog, feel it's an aggressive move, and they're not comfortable with it.
So says Pets Against Hugs.
Why does my dog then climb, if I'm lying on the couch, he'll climb up and just kind of curl up on top?
Well, it's foreplay.
Okay.
Or he's hungry.
See, you had to really take that somewhere I didn't want.
No, the dog's initiating it that way. It's kind of like if Mary ever wants to hug anybody, she'll like let you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
That is all clear now.
I feel like Sandberg needs a bouncer now when she walks around with people.
Oh, I like that.
I'm glad I was the appropriate one. That's all I got to say.
Yeah. It's you, going, Captain Appropriate.
Sandberg's going, I need a shower right now.
Time now for your traffic. Here's Mary. Mary, here's a hug.
Oh, thank you, Steve.
There you go.
I needed that.
A word about Ron Majors. I would recommend you read the Robert Feeder blog at robertfeeder.com. Short, direct, to the point, and appropriately reverential. Robert Feeder writes today about Ron Majors when he came to town. And about how he was and is the best. And you know that it's when people in the same position recognize you as the same. Mark Sapelsa, who's as good an anchor as you would find anywhere, will tell you Ron Majors is the best. Yeah. And Majors is, and I think Roe and Sapelsa were talking about this the other day on Roe's show. It's like Roe is very close to Ron Majors and Sapelsa is as well. Like, you know, he's like a big brother to both of them. Though I have to believe if you put Majors and Sapelsa and Roe in the picture, Roe's going to be the one that's probably been adopted from another family.
Maybe, yeah.
But anyway, here's the feeder column. The quote from Majors, and see if you can tell me when he said this. I hope that what I do is without pretension, the most straightforward, understandable way to do this. I also hope that I think on my feet in breaking situations. I hope that I'll hold our staff's work up for view in the best possible light, and I hope I'm here for the long run. Ron Majors said that in 1982,
yeah,
right after he came here from Minneapolis.
Was at Channel 5 then, right?
He came here to Channel 5.
Yeah.
37-year-old Majors had settled into the key anchor position at Channel 5, and at the time was teamed with Linda Yu, who would eventually go over to Channel 7 as well. Ron Aldridge, who was the Tribune TV critic at the time, said quickly, though quietly, he's established himself as a quality act, the best in Chicago, because he does the best job of doing what anchors must do, speak with authority, serve up stories smoothly, ad-lib unobtrusively, and maintain a professional, credible, intelligent atmosphere. 35 years later, Feeder writes, Major's still the best in Chicago. He's retiring after more than 50 years in the business, marks an end of an era for Chicago journalism and a watershed moment for television news. Thanks, Ron. So nicely done by Rob Feeder.
And he delivered on that, too.
Yep.
The thing, Peter Jennings was a phenomenal anchor man, and I think maybe the best to ever do it. Not a terribly nice person, but phenomenally good. He would sit there and go, well, 9-11. 9-11 is a perfect example, and I think I brought this up to Majors. But on 9-11, Peter Jennings came into work, you know, at 9 or 10 in the morning when he was called in, and stayed there till 11 o'clock or midnight. I think he was wearing a sweater most of the day, and just tried to make us all feel better about the worst day in all of our lives. He was able to do that with the big stories and the little stories. And to me, the great anchors in the world, think about what an anchor does. An anchor reads to you. Mm-hmm. There's a thing called a teleprompter where the words come up, and the anchor reads to you for 22 minutes on a local newscast. If you're fascinated by that person, you know, then they're doing something right. They're connecting to you on a different level. Majors always did that.
Oh, always. He was, if not one of the best, the best.
And I don't know what it is, because I've never seen anything like it. I don't know, you know, if there's other families like this, but Ron's younger brother, Paul, and I were good friends in the Minneapolis days in the early 90s. And I've lost touch with Paul, which is my fault. But Paul's been a big deal out in L.A. for years doing local news there. But Paul had that same thing, you know, whether it was watching big brother Ron do it, or, you know, he just developed his own thing. But just incredibly smooth. They're like James Bond doing the news. You know, they just sit there in a suit. They look good in the suit, and they tell you the news.
But also, to his credit as well, not only is he a great anchor and can read the prompter without stumbling, he can speak off the cuff.
Yeah, well, that's key.
In any situation, and just, you know, fluid, fluent, and captivating.
No, it's amazing. And he will be missed. Alan Krzyzewski's terrific, but he's stepping into big old shoes to fill. But Krzyzewski's such a great guy. He'd go, look, I'm not filling Ron Majors' shoes. Nobody's filling Ron Majors' shoes. But we wish Alan luck as well. But Ron Majors, nobody better, right? Nobody better. There's a chance I'm getting old. I was a disc jockey playing this record. Great song. Donny Osmond.
I love this song.
And I think it was about 12 years ago. I don't know, 10, 11, 12 years ago. I opened for Donny at Governor's State. And he said, come here, I got to tell you something. And he told me, don't talk about this, but I just found out I'm going to be a grandfather. Yeah. And now I'm a grandfather, and he still looks like the son, and I look like the grandfather. What the hell's wrong with that picture? Hi, my buddy.
How are you, Steve Irr?
I'm doing great. How's Paramount
You're
Arts Center?
Kicking it big time in Chicago, huh?
Number one talk show, as long as Oprah doesn't come back.
Congratulations. That's fantastic. You deserve it, man. You really do.
Yeah, I remember. Thank you for that. I remember the night you told me you were going to be a grandfather, the joy on your face. And how thrilled you are. How many now?
Eight.
Eight grandkids.
Eight. Yeah, and now you probably have that same joy on your face. You get it now. You get it.
Oh, it's the best. Yeah. I mean, ask these guys. How many times a day do I show you pictures of Abigail?
Yeah, it's
all
ridiculous.
Day long.
950,000 times. But we love it, Donnie. We
yes,
love
we do.
Seeing those.
Yeah. You should see my wallet when it fans out. I mean, it just goes a mile long.
Donnie Marie at the Paramount Theater at Aurora. It's a beautiful theater. They're already halfway through the room.
Theater. I love it. We played there a couple years ago, and it's just a really nice little intimate theater. So we opened up a couple days ago, and we got five shows this week and having the time of our lives. We took a couple weeks off of our Vegas run, and I got to tell you, they want us to go one more year. And, you know, we were supposed to be there for 6 weeks
exactly.
in 2008. This is our eighth year. They want to go 9 years. So Marie and I are trying to decide what to do.
It's a lot. Now, listen, he's blessed. We're all blessed. We're not coal mining here. But nobody knows how much work goes into that day after day Vegas thing, right?
Well, no. But you don't want it to look hard. You want everybody to walk away saying, oh, that I could do that.
Right.
It's got to be fun. That's the secret of show business. You've got to enjoy it. And I do. But there are times, Steve, and you experience the same thing, coming into the station, starting it all up again.
Yep.
But once it all starts, it's great. It's that secret of show business that everybody wants to experience, and it's real. So I love it.
Donnie,
it keeps me going.
I remember having a lunch with you back in the day, and we were talking about Joseph, because everybody remembers the long run you had here in Chicago. And
right.
I think this is in Minneapolis that you and I were talking, and I was talking about doing those epic numbers in Joseph night after night after night. And you were telling me a story about occasionally you'd be, you know, you're driving your car, and suddenly 10 minutes later, you can't remember what you did for the last 10 minutes, and you hope you didn't run over a busload of nuns. Oh.
Yep.
You were telling me you're singing a song, and you're thinking, you're going through your grocery list in your head, and you're going, oh, my God, I hope I nailed it.
That is true. It happens all the time. You get on autopilot, you really have to pull the reins back and say, no, one, pay attention. there was a time in Minneapolis that I was singing, and we were designing our home that we were building at the time. And do you remember the time where all the children's choirs were singing?
Oh, yeah.
La, 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 la. And,
and
Joseph is behind the bars contemplating life and everything. I'm thinking, I'm going to put the door over there. We'll put a window right there. And then here comes my vocal, and I have no idea what the words are. No idea. So I start singing. And they went over and across the moon. And I just started making up words. And the kids look at me like, this guy's in trouble. And the audience is like, why is he singing?
How many Joseph shows did you do in that run?
2,000.
2,000 shows.
Six years of it. And what's funny is that the scene where I'm running around Mrs. Potiphar's bed, accused of doing some very naughty things with her, she's chasing me, all the dancers are chasing me, that was the time every show they tried to pull the loincloth off of me. And it's only held on by four snaps, Steve. So they never got it off in 2,000 shows, except for one show. Salt Lake City of all places.
Oh, no, it's a home game.
My neighbors are out there. My family's out. The show comes to a complete halt. Everybody's laughing. I'm thinking, gee, thank you very much. Put it back on and continue the show.
So 2,000 Joseph shows, obviously, and one of the more fascinating conversations I ever had with Donny Osmond, we were talking about his friend Michael Jackson and the times you and Michael got to talk to each other, because you think about it. Who had that experience? Michael and Donny, growing up in music families, the youngest kid becomes the leader, or the youngest kid at the time becomes the lead in the family, and just epic amounts of fame. And yet you grew up in, and I'm not knocking Joe Jackson here, but you grew up in a family and filled with
love. Well, he needs to be knocked a little bit.
All right, I'll knock him. But my point is, you come out of that relatively normal, and Michael's problems are well documented.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was Donnie and Michael in a parallel situation in the early 70s, and then obviously in the 80s he left me in the dust with Off the Wall and Thriller and all that kind of stuff. But we always stayed in contact with each other, and every time we talked, he said, how's your family, how's your mom? And every time I went over to his house, Joe would just glare at me. Just not a happy person. But the last time I talked to Mike, he called me. I was on tour, and I pick up the phone, and he says, hello. And I knew immediately it was Mike. I said, Michael, what are you doing? Hi, Donnie. I said, where are you? He says, I can't tell you. I said, Mike, you're talking to me. Where are you? He said, I'm in Phoenix with my kids hiding. We rented this big motorhome, and I'm hiding. I said, Mike, you are 9 hours away from my home here in Provo, Utah. The kids, no one will know you're here. Let them swim in my backyard. Fill a little normalcy in your life. And he said, I really need that right now. And he never took me up on it.
I talked to him. That's sad, right? Because it was an open invitation.
Yeah, very sad.
Yeah.
Very sad.
And now at this point, you look back and you lose Prince. This has been such a bizarre year.
Oh,
Bowie,
my goodness,
and
what
Prince.
A year.
And you know, music, you go, well, music will never recover.
Glenn Frey.
Yeah, it's just incredible.
Like, wow.
Donny Osmond and Marie are at the Paramount Theater in Aurora. You can get tickets by picking up your phone and calling 630-896-6666. You can go to the Paramount Theater box office, or I'm looking for a website.
DonnyOsmond.com.
Donny.com. Oh, and ParamountAurora.com as well.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
By the way, Marie looks absolutely beautiful, but she is your sister. Do you guys fight backstage?
All the time. You know what she does, and I'm trying to do this myself now, is everywhere she goes, she carries Photoshop with her.
And what is she doing with it? Because I'm feeling like there's a punchline here.
I could say that about sisters. Anybody else says that, I beat them up.
So you're telling me
the things that she says about me.
I'm telling you, she looks fantastic. Not that you're a slouch, you know. I'd always slow dance in a spotlight with you. You know that, even though you're a little handsy.
Last time we did it, I really enjoyed it.
But the show itself, because I know there's people listening.
Still in therapy.
The show itself, because I know people saw the Vegas show. You're doing some of the best of the Vegas show, aren't you?
We are. We brought Vegas to Aurora. Now, obviously not the entire show. That'd be ridiculous.
Right.
But we brought the dancers, the multimedia, the band. And it's funny. It's full of dancing. Speaking of dancing, I just sent an email off to Niall, who won Dancing with the Stars last night. And I called that right from the beginning.
Oh, you did?
But let me tell you. That was the hardest thing I ever did in my life, was to win that trophy.
Well, I remember your season, because it was sort of nip and tuck as well. But who did you beat in the final? I forgot.
Maya was, you know, the R&B singer Maya.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Kelly Osbourne.
That's right.
Oh, that was the top three.
Yep. But what is it? Is it just the athleticism of it and the grind? Is that the deal?
Oh, it's not never ending. If you make it the entire way, it's 10 weeks of no sleep. And on top of this, Steve, I was doing shows nightly in Las Vegas.
Right, right. So,
so it was like, really? And I won it with a broken toe, a fractured rib, and a fused neck.
In case you didn't know, his professional dancer was Mike Tyson.
It was.
But the thing, we see the videos, if you watch Dancing with the Stars, you see the videos of the rehearsal rooms, and they're just clips.
Yeah.
But do you guys just live in those rehearsal rooms when you're preparing?
You do. It's nonstop. And back in season 9, and they've changed it over the years, there was one week where we had 4 dances to learn in 1 week. Actually, less than that. It was like 4 days. I had 4 days to learn 4 dances.
I don't even know. And then you factor that into the Niall this year, who's deaf. You go, I don't understand how that's even possible.
Yeah. I mean, I just, because I have 2 deaf brothers. And so I watched Niall with a little bit, I don't know, it just meant a lot to me because of my deaf brothers to see him win and overcome the odds. And, you know, he would just watch PETA, Murgatroyd, and she would tap him and just keep an eye on her and stay in time. It's just phenomenal. So good on him.
Yeah, it had to be emotional, too, with the family thing for you just watching it. Emotional in a good way.
Huge.
And all the injuries occurred basically in those practice rooms too.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness!
Right?
The injuries. You just have no, you're taped up. You're just anything you can imagine. It's just painful. I remember the night before my win, Kim Johnson was my partner, and sweetest lady on the planet. But don't give her a whip.
But in
like
general,
11
or
at night. It's 11 o'clock at night. And we have to get up at 5 in the morning to get ready for the show. And I'm on the floor, dead tired. I can't move a muscle. And she said, one more time. I looked at her and said, Kim, I'm done. And then she said to me, changed my whole perspective. She said, do you want to win or don't you?
Oh, yeah.
And I got up off that floor and did it one more time, and we took the trophy.
Well, and that's, as competitive as you are, that's all you got to do.
That's right.
Come on. You think Donnie would have gotten a meal in the Osmonds house? Olive loved him, but she had a lot of kids to feed.
Well, that was the training, you know, just like fend for yourself.
How's the family? Everybody great, I hope?
Everybody's great. Yeah, everybody's great. When you get out to Vegas, give me a buzz. Have you see the show. I've got some plans. You know me. I've got plans all the time.
Right.
And in about 2 years from now, I've got an idea that you're going to love
I'm
developing right now.
Well, good. I'll buy you dinner, even though it's your town.
Okay.
Oh, he didn't even fight me on it. It was unbelievable. Incredible. All the best, man. I love getting reconnected with you. It's been a little while, but you're always welcome here, whatever's going on. And Donnie and Marie, this is one of the great things you're going to see in show business, not just this year, any year. And it's right here in Aurora at the beautiful Paramount Theater, ParamountAurora.com, 630-896-6666. Plus, he's all over social media. Probably the best way to link is just go to your website, right?
Website or Facebook, I'm all over the place. You know, go to DonnieOsmond.com, look at my new furniture line. That's the whole other industry I'm in right now.
How about that?
Yeah, tell you what. You go to DonnieOsmond.com, you pick something out, I will send it to you.
DonnieOsmond.com. I'm going to go right now. By the way, how come you never got into a teeth whitening endorsement? It seems like somebody would have paid you for that.
You'd think
time
that
ago.
Would be. You know, I did get a Colgate offer one time. I thought, no, that's the last thing I want to do.
Well, give it time. You got to fund that new idea in 2 years.
By the way, who's there with you?
That's the beautiful Andrea Darlis and Dave Ennett.
Andrea.
Donnie.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Didn't even say hi to you, and you're right there. How rude of me.
No, I love you. This is going to sound, Steve, do not make this dirty at all. I had your doll, the Donnie and Marie dolls, with the Donnie with the purple socks. And I'm still scarred because you came touring through Chicago with Joseph, and I was younger than I am now, and it was you, I think, had the record for performing that role more than anybody else, but it was the one night that you were off. It was your understudy.
You went on the night Donnie
wasn't
there?
Yes, it was the one night, and they announced that it was
the one night.
Literally, it was the one performance that
he
missed, and I've been scarred my whole life.
I'm so sorry.
But I'll
come see
your show.
No, here's the good news. I'll take you to Vegas, and Donnie will redo all of Joseph in a hotel suite right there, including with the jacket.
I'm in.
All right, I love you, man. Be well.
All right. Take care, guys.
See you, buddy.
Take care.
See you, Donnie.
It's 9:29. Back after this on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
720 WGN.
9:43. My friend Mark Slaby's here. Next week, we will gather for the IPAF golf outing. And the Illinois Patriot Education Fund serves a purpose that is one of those things, Mark, that you and I have talked about for many years. When people wrap their arms around it and their head around it and they understand it, you got them. They're hooked. So explain what it is IPAF does every day. Let me do it with a microphone. Now try.
Simply said, it's that we are raising scholarship funds and creating educational opportunities for Illinois military families.
And the money stays in Illinois.
100% of it stays in Illinois.
Right. So the idea being that if a man or a woman serve overseas and protect the rest of us and our freedoms here, the least we can do is help give their family a chance to maximize their lives back home.
Correct. And the model is that we're trying to make investments back in our community, back in our neighborhoods. So the individual that's investing in the families that we're serving literally knows the individual that lives across the street from them in many cases that's serving our country.
Thankfully, the golf outing sells out very quickly year to year, and things are tighter than ever this year. But are there seats left for the dinner?
There are seats always accommodating for the barbecue or the lunch, but we sold out.
Yeah, we'll bring food to your car.
That's right. We'll do
it. Just give
anybody,
us your money.
That's right. Anybody who wants to get involved is always welcome to go to our website at illinoispatriot.org, register, and then hear our story, meet the families. And the one thing that we're always very proud of is that when a donor comes to our event, they meet the very individuals that their investments, their donations are going to.
Some amazing guests this year, too, at the dinner, so I hope people can be here. The Jemerson family is here, or at least most of them. And this is an amazing American story, amazing military family, and a family of heroes. You want to do the introductions?
I'd love to. I think one of the things I want to highlight is that often when we've been guests on your show, we've had the opportunity to highlight an individual who has served our country.
Right.
And in this particular case, what we would like to point out is that the investments and the donations of the community have invested in a family. And we're very proud of the Jemerson family. And Renee and her daughters, Ashley and Angela, are invested in our efforts very much. And we're very proud of everything that they've done. So
it's a good-looking family.
It is a very good-looking family.
Ladies, you look beautiful.
Thank you.
Howard was working today?
Yes, he is.
What's Howard do?
Howard is a vice president for...
He's a big shot.
Yes, he's a big shot. Yes,
yeah, he's a big shot.
Shot.
He's
I can
a big
say
shot.
That.
Yeah, we can't say too much because it's on a need-to-know basis. You met Howard when you were serving?
Yes, sir, I did. We actually met in Korea.
And you were in for how long?
I was in for 12 and a half years, sir.
In the Army?
Yes, sir.
And what sort of situation did you have in Korea? You were stationed where?
I was stationed in Yongsan, Korea.
Okay. What was your job most of the time?
I was worked in logistics unit supply specialist.
Okay. So you're a good-looking woman, and you're across the other side of the world, and suddenly this handsome guy comes over. Did Howard have any game?
Did Howard have any game?
Yeah. I don't want to put the daughters into therapy here, but what was his pickup line?
His pickup line was a bowl of cereal.
A bowl of cereal.
A bowl of cereal. Yes,
yes,
it was.
Yes. Can I buy you a bowl of Wheaties? That type of thing?
Yes.
And you guys have been married how long?
It is going on 25 years.
God
this
bless.
Year. Yes.
God bless. Robbing the cradle, man. 25 years. You got married young. And Angela and Ashley are here. Angela, you are going to school where?
At the University of Toledo.
And you are a sophomore?
I'm going to be a junior in the fall. So
it's going fast, right?
Yes, moving quickly.
And Ashley?
Yes, I attend the same school, the University of Toledo, and I'm studying forensic science.
Well, good for both of you.
So I'll be done in December.
And Mark, both of these lovely young ladies are IPEF scholars.
They are, 2015 and 2016. I think the thing that's important for the listening audience to understand is that these are repetitive scholarships. So we're making an investment in this family. So every year that the girls continue to do well in school and get good grades and do their very best, we continue to make investments and fill the gaps that are not provided by the post 9/11 GI Bill, which are plentiful.
So, and it's got to be a tremendous relief to you and your husband to know that you're getting a little help here because you got two great girls who have earned it.
Yes, I mean, it is a tremendous help. I mean, it's just such a huge help. I mean, basically, it was a scholarship that we didn't know anything about, and right. We were introduced to the scholarship, and we just receive it just so well that it's an organization out here that is willing to help military
and cares
families.
About the fact that you yes. served and cares Absolutely. About the fact that your husband served. Absolutely. Let me tell you something. This guy right here, he's a real deal.
Yes,
the
he
real
is.
Deal yeah, he right is. Here. And you guys are going to go on with your lives now. Forensic science, what type of job does that lead to?
So my end goal, I would like to work with human trafficking victims, where it's labor, sex crimes, or even organ donating. So I'm really excited about my future, and I just want to change the world little by little.
Okay, now let's say. Okay, I hate to break this to you, big sis. Top that.
Well, I'm studying physical therapy at the University of Toledo, and I want to help people as well, but I want to help them as in like a recovery situation. So once people get injured and they feel like their life is like at the end, I want to give them that happiness that they deserve and have a healthy functioning lifestyle. But my ultimate goal
is to work.
We're going to business together.
We're doing radio, Steve. Yeah. We do radio.
Right.
Yeah. Mr. Weisenheimer here gets up every morning and talks to YouTube. Well, I hope you guys are proud of yourselves. You're getting good grades?
Yes, good grades.
Yeah. I'm guessing mom and dad are making sure of that too, as much as they can.
Right.
Are you Absolutely. Calling home or are you just texting?
We call home.
Oh, they call home.
We actually come home too often.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah, never too often.
There is no
never
too often.
Never. Right.
Especially for a home cooked meal. Yes.
And which of you has daddy more wrapped around your finger?
I was saying Angela. I'm like the daddy's girl.
She owned up to that immediately, didn't she? Well, I'm proud of you. I just got to meet you. I'm proud of you. So good for
you. Thank
you. But this said, you know, after all these years being in the service, to know that you got a group this big as IPEF, which has grown from 0 to 60 in about that fast, it's got to be pretty emotional for you to know how much people care, right?
Yes, it is. It's very emotional for me.
So I can't wait to see you out there at the dinner. Are we going to make these guys speak at the dinner? Because they're pretty impressive.
Absolutely. Howard and the girls and Renee will be speaking. They'll be our guest speakers, main speakers. And you know, we're really excited. One of the other things I want to point out is that once individuals come into the Illinois Patriot Education Fund's family, we start clicking in mentorship and leadership opportunities for these students so that when they actually graduate, they have a springboard into civilian life and in any of the career interests and pursuits that they want to provide themselves.
So it's a great networking sort of thing as well. Not that you two are going to need the help. You're going to run the world.
We'll be going to them.
Are you kidding me?
Remember us. And thank you for your service.
Yeah, that's true. Thank you. Hang around a second because we got something else I want to mention to some of the folks that have helped you out this year again at IPEF. More in a moment with my friend Mark Slaby, or Slaby if you prefer to actually say his name. The Illinois Patriot Education Fund website is what?
IllinoisPatriot.org.
Back after this on 720 WGN. Steve Cochran live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Illinois Patriot Education Fund founder Mark Slaby is here. And Mark has taken an awful lot of his time, effort, and resources to put together an organization of great, great people, too numerous to thank here. But I thought you should take a minute here and thank some of the vendors and sponsors that have stepped up.
I appreciate that. I think it goes without saying we want to thank WGN. You guys have always been there for us. Every individual on your team has been very helpful in getting our word out. And because of that, we've recruited more volunteers. We want to thank the volunteers that have put a lot of time into this effort. But the Jim Skinner family in particular is a presenting sponsor. Fifth Third Bank, Law Vision, Advanced Resources, they will be our lunch and dinner sponsors. Blue Cross Blue Shield, Wintrust Bank, Aon, they've been with us from the beginning. Legacy Marketing, they designed our logo. Sears Holding, Marin Electric, Eric Nixon steps up all the time, and it actually employs IPEF scholars, and Joe Perillo.
And by the way, if anybody wants to go out and start an organization to do the right thing, God bless you for doing it. But every one of those names he mentioned, that's phone calls and meetings, and then more phone calls and meetings, and then somebody steps up and they get involved. And as I said, you got them. Now, we've talked about Rags of Honor here a bunch. There's another company that you've come across, because I know you've done a lot of nice things with Rags of Honor. But what is Grunt Style? Because they supply the shirts this time?
So we were given a really nice opportunity and a gift this year by a great organization that employs almost 100 veterans. And the founder is a former Army drill sergeant, and they've donated over $500,000 to veteran causes since 2009. They stepped up and they provided us shirts. As you know, we're very frugal when it comes to anything that we do. So these shirts were
You're trying to return 110% of the proceeds. That's normally the way you work.
Yeah. That's right. And they allowed us to do this. And in fact, they've really stepped up, and I'm wearing the shirt today, as you can see.
Looks great. It's a great shirt.
It's
got a little camo going on.
It does, yes. And all the golfers, as well as the volunteers and community members that come, will be able to receive one of these shirts, and we want to really thank them, because they've gone above and beyond, not only for us, but other military organizations. And if it's too much to ask, I'd also like to thank a few more in-kind sponsors.
Yeah, of course.
So PepsiCo, Clear Channel, Tour Edge, Catherine Genesic Productions, the PGA Superstore.
Nice to see Catherine.
That's
again.
Right.
Looking
she always
fabulous
does a great job.
Always.
And Catherine does a lot of volunteer work for us as well, and she really steps up and does some amazing things, and we're really grateful for her and all the volunteers' time. PGA Superstore, as I mentioned, Frost, Crevo Media, and here's one of my favorites, Three Monkeys and an Aardvark Studios. So that's great.
That's what they used to call a show before I came back here, Three Monkeys and an Aardvark.
We also, if I may, we have something special that has really started to take shape this year, and that's that individuals who cannot make the golf outing have started to donate for our Purple Heart recipients foursomes. And we're very pleased to tell everybody that this continues to grow. So listening audience members out there, if they can't make the event and they still want to donate $2,500 to underwrite the expenditure of our Purple Heart recipients, we would appreciate that. So far, Electroflex, Pearl Mortgage, these individuals have stepped up and they've been very generous.
I'll tell you a quick story about this outing. In the past, we've done this hole-in-one contest, like a lot of outings do. But in a hole-in-one contest, you've got generals, and you've got wounded warriors, and you've got people that are amazing. So Mark and I are sitting there on the side of the hill at Medina, which is crazy beautiful, as a lot of people know. And we're looking out on this little par three. And a wounded warrior steps up who had lost his right leg and his left arm, I believe, in service to America. And he shanks a ball into the water. And you could hear a pin drop until the guy behind me and to my left went, "You suck!" So my head turns around. I got a swivel because I'm going to take this guy apart. Well, I turn around. It's a guy with no arms and no legs whose best friends are the guy that just shanked the ball in the water.
Right.
Another American hero who's paid incredible sacrifice. And I just love the fact that guys are always going to be guys no matter what state of disrepair they're in. As one wounded warrior gave a hard time to another. Right. The needle on a day, because that's what the day's about, man. The day's about having fun.
It's a very inspiring day, and you meet these individuals throughout the day. And, there's little quiet moments where you just take a deep breath and you think, this is what we're doing this for, to invest in our
rock stars.
Families.
Look at Jemersons. They're all rock stars.